He goes, well, that's weird because you have 15 projects to record this this weekend. So it'd be really cool if all of you can rent out the same
this weekend?
Yeah, this weekend.
All practicums too, by the way.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah.
We're bitching about being in school.
Yeah.
But hey, this is our last semester.
Yeah, graduation. This is the graduation
series, in case you were confused by the title.
The graduation series on...
Wait.
Wait, can I do ASMR?
Oh, we got new mics.
Local beer, local beer, and...
Oh no! Well, that's the end of the episode.
Cahaba River Brewing, sponsor us. Blondie. That's what I like.
Hold on, I'm gonna get a napkin.
Guys, I'll be honest, can you... I don't...
Well, I like it?
Well, no, the beer is good.
Oh, okay.
Very Blondie's? Smooth, very nice.
While I'm gonna get a napkin, because I spilled beer on my... tell the boys what the podcast is all about.
Podcast is all about me and my friend Kyle and my friend Jake talking. We're all three film majors,
college students who don't know anything about anything, and we're gonna attribute meaning to movies that maybe or maybe not actually have one. It doesn't matter.
Well, they're not supposed to have meaning.
They're not supposed to, but guess what?
We find it.
In Book of Eli, the movie without meaning, and yet we somehow found a little bit of meaning right in there.
And like New Year's Eve, who did not have meaning at all. Yeah.
Or Transformers, throwback episode, which also did not have much meaning.
That was before us.
Yeah. It was a podcast before time.
Like Lamb Before Time, which is an episode that's already out.
Yes, it is. Okay,
let's just name all the episodes.
Ariana Grande or Drake?
What?
Brad Pitt or Payne Stewart or Doug the Pug? Khloe Kardashian.
So as you can see, we are looking a bit more professional. We've got our lights over here, back there,
which you can't see.
You say that, and they're going to cut out the back ones.
They're made out of cake pans. Okay, we're shooting in log, like actual log. So hopefully the colors are
good. Fran Tarkenton, Joe Montana, Joe Montana.
I'm going to make sure.
New microphones. We got a four channel mixer.
Yeah, baby.
BTS. This is.
I'm giving you a list of people that's been done. Danny DeVito, Andy Kaufman, Jim Morrison, any one of the fucking Beatles. Pete Best, George Carlin,
Dad,
Danny Glover, Mel Gibson, Ice-T, Ice Cube, Vanilla Ice, Elvis fucking Presley, Priscilla Presley, Seth Meyers. What about Seth Meyers? Or for that matter, Jay Leno. Conan's not really doing much right now. Will Ferrell, Howard Stern, Baba Booey.
Put your mouth around this.
Freddie Stroma, James Gunn, what the fuck, dude?
Those last two aren't even things.
Alice Cooper, Ozzy Osbourne, Sharon Osbourne, Bill Cosby, he just got out, he's got time on his hands. Amy Winehouse,
dude, Amy Winehouse is fucking dead.
Optimus Prime, Shipwreck, Cobra Commander, the fucking cunts from Riverdale.
Alright, most of those, you're right, could probably go to prison, but I would never put Ariana Grande in there. She looks too innocent.
Possibly true. Possibly.
From a previous guest on the the podcast, our boy Sam Thigpen, he actually was on the episode Killer Sofa, right? I'm just gonna
which just released a few weeks ago,
which is in our series, and he was like, "Hey, you should do Green Street Hooligans," and I was like, "Okay, cool, email that to us," and he never did, but it's okay because Sam is a dear friend. And helps me get jobs and stuff. So
yes, I'm sort of curious as to why, knowing what this podcast is about, he would recommend this movie.
Why?
Well, wait, Sam Thigpen?
Yeah.
Oh, well, because
who did you think?
Well, because he recommended Killer Sofa, which is
No. Mary did.
Yeah, remember he was on Killer Sofa.
Oh, well, he was on Killer Sofa.
Why is this? That's okay. Because we feel. Oh wait, no.
Sorry, Sam. Love you. Anyway.
Oh, look at that, Kyle. Look, he's getting the pink right there on the side of his face.
Yeah, he's got pink eye.
From eating jelly beans.
All right, we're 4 minutes in. We should go ahead and just talk about this movie.
And he recommended this movie, Green Street Hooligans. And for the longest time, I kept forgetting about it. And I kept thinking it was called Rolling Green Hills.
Yeah, go ahead.
And it's not?
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
No, no, you continue. I'm doing my own thing with Chris here. You know how we do talking during Chris's bit?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, now it's
I gotcha. That's okay.
You admitted to talking over me?
So, Chris, go ahead and do the recap.
I figured.
Huh? Are you talking about hashtag Dash?
No. No.
Love you, Dash.
Stop.
Oh, it's your phone. I thought you were moving the light. Okay. Recap. 2005, Elijah Wood. Go.
Okay, yeah. Green Street Hooligans. Movie, 2005, starring Elijah Wood, what he just said. Elijah Wood is a dude named Matt Buckner, who is at Harvard University, but he's not. He's at Harvard University.
University.
But he's packing his bags because he got expelled for a little bit because he had cocaine in his belongings. But it wasn't his cocaine. It was his roommate's cocaine. Jeremy, who was a little, you know, snobby rich kid. Who is part of a very well-known family, so, you know, nothing's bad is going to happen to him. So he essentially just paid Matt $10,000 as, like, an I'm sorry gift to getting him kicked out of Harvard. And so Matt, you know, down in his luck, takes that $10,000 and uses part of it to fly all the way over to the great land of Britain. To meet his
Britain!
to stay with his sister for a little bit, who is married to a British guy named Steve, and he stays with them for a little bit, and they chat and all of that. And all of a sudden, Steve's brother walks into the house. His name is Pete, and he's kind of a rough around the edges guy, and, you know, carrying on and trying to get his brother Steve to go to a football game with him. Which doesn't really seem like it'd be that big of a deal, but Steve seems very adamant to not going. And he's like, hey, how about you take, you know, my wife's brother with you so that you can kind of, you know, get him out of our hair and we can have a date night. And then he's like, oh, but I don't want to take a yank with me. And he's not Scottish, but his dialect kind of sounds Scottish. And
it's not full Scott.
It's not.
But it's Scottish.
I was talking to Jared about it earlier. Because he's very much into the European football, and
football is European soccer.
Yeah,
he's European.
Yeah.
No, he pooped himself though.
Anyway, we'll get into that later. So
it's about poo poo. We stay stinky. We go doo doo.
I love that.
Pete reluctantly takes Elijah Wood to the ball game, and you know. He tries to get him to cough up the money, but then he kind of, you know, tries to stand his ground. And he's like, you know what? I like you. Maybe you can learn something from us. Maybe we can be, you know, good pals. And so he takes him to the bar to you know, pregame for the game, getting drunk, having some beers, having a jolly old time. And he introduces him to all of his friends who are... you know, they're kind of a little too close, almost like, you know, you would say as close as a gang of friends would be, hint hint, because they're a fucking gang essentially. And guy walks in a little late. His name is how do you say his name? I'm trying to find it on here.
Bava?
Bava?
What's
shit,
Bava,
why can't I find it?
Which guy is it?
Okay, Bover. Yeah. Bover. Yeah, it's a weird name. But Bover comes in, and he doesn't like Americans all too much. And he doesn't like that Pete, although he and all the other guys are getting along with Elijah Wood, Matt, Dover's very prejudiced to Americans. And anyway...
Probably because we beat their ass.
Yeah.
In 1812. Yeah. Nope.
But anyway, you know, they drink, they have a good time. Elijah Wood fits right in, and they're all drunk and they're all happy, and they go over to the ball game, and they're at the ball game, and they have a jolly old time. And as they're making their way out
downtown,
the fans from Manchester United ends up wait, hold up, shit.
83, sorry.
God damn it.
What?
Sorry. Hold up.
Did you run out of breath, or did you lose
your
space?
Yeah, no, I lost my space.
Well, it's right here.
Okay. No, I think we're right here.
Okay.
Okay.
Birmingham.
So he's on the way to the game, right?
Yeah.
No, he's leaving the game.
Okay.
Okay, so he's leaving.
He's leaving the game. And he's mugged by three Birmingham fellas.
Yeah, it's Birmingham. And
no, they're British, so they say Birmingham.
Birmingham.
Yeah. So the fans from Birmingham City, from the Birmingham City team, jump Matt.
Some Muppets.
And his friends help him with that.
Barnyard.
And then more of the reinforcements of Birmingham City just start like trampling all over them. And then Matt actually gets up and starts defending himself. And the rest of Pete's friends, who are, by the way, fans of the Green Street Elite, what the fuck are you guys doing?
What are you pointing at? Shit?
I'm trying to get him to get his reference. It's Blue's Clues. He goes, pow, pow.
Okay.
Not you. I'm talking to Kyle.
All right, once they're leaving the game, the fans from Birmingham City jump Matt, and then Pete and his friends, who are fans of Green Street Elite, they help him out, and Matt gets to his own feet and starts, you know, defending for himself, and they see that, and they're like, hey, and so, you know, after they, you know, get off clean with a little bit of cuts and bruises, nothing too bad. They induct him into their union. And now the most important thing about this is that Pete and his guys, who are part of the firm of the Green Street Elite, a firm is essentially in this movie. I don't know if it's a real thing. Well, it was a real thing a while back, but it's essentially like a mob surrounding a specific football team. And, like, they place bets and do things like that. It's essentially a gang. But they induct him in. And a very important thing about Green Street Elite and Green Street Elite's firms is that they do not take kindly to journalists because they seem to be their biggest enemy. And what's important about this is that Matt was journalism major. But he's purposely telling Pete that he majored in history so that he can, you know, still hang with them, although he's not writing anything about them, so we think. So anyway, now that we're caught up, Pete and his boys head to another game for Manchester United, and I'm just going to read from the Wikipedia here to kind of to because we're already running out of time. So Matt ends up sneaking into the train, even though Pete tells him not to go there because, you know, Manchester gets a little too out of hand sometimes. He sneaks on the train to help and when they are warned that 40 of the Manchester United firm members are waiting for them at the train station that the train is going to put them at. And so Bover, hearing this, pulls the emergency brake. They get off the train, and then Matt bribes a dude to put him in their truck and have Matt sit in the passenger seat. And, so they can, make it to the train station and get the jump on the, 40 members instead of just going right by them. They do decide to pick the fight. And it's a pretty crazy fight. Matt gets beat up pretty bad, and they eventually have to go back home. And Bover is now jealous of Matt's rise in the ranks, considering that this, you know, Yank is now, you know, more popular than him. So Bover talks to Tommy Hatcher, who is the head of the rival firm of Green Street, the NGO. And after one of the members of the GSE sees Matt meeting his father, a journalist for the Times, because Matt's father comes back to Europe, even though he hasn't been in his life for a while, and tells him, hey, you don't need to be hanging around these hooligans. You need to be doing what you were supposed to do at Harvard. And so they see him hanging at the Times. They think that he's a spy for the London Times. And so they assume that Matt is just a spy. And so Bover informs Pete of this, and Steve goes to the bar that they're at to warn Matt. that you know, things are about to get bad. And Matt discovers in him talking and him trying to warn him that Steve is the founder and former leader of the Green Street Elite. He is, you know, the major. He's the president, essentially. And he retired because one time they were fighting their rival gang, the NGO, and he saw Tommy, the leader of that firm, he saw his son essentially die in the middle of a fight. His skull got crushed. And he was just a 12-year-old boy. And so because of that, Steve vowed never to return. And his wife, Matt's sister, told him that she will leave him if he ever, you know, gets mixed up in that again. Meanwhile, Bobber is being a little snake, and he's telling Tommy that, you know, they got a journalist working for him, and that he's a threat to both the GSE and Tommy's firm. And so Tommy has Bobber take him and all his guys out to the bar that they're at. And Tommy betrays Bobber and then beats the shit out of him. And they bust into the bar and beat the shit out of everybody. And Tommy stabs Steve in the neck, which is he's mortally wounded. And
that's what happened.
Yeah, like Kyle.
Throw that
that's,
up.
Yeah,
throw that up.
Like what Dash did to Kyle. So anyway,
Chris.
They rush Steve over to the hospital. And Matt and Pete both are like, okay,
that's what you get.
Yeah, okay.
Nice peek there, boys. Nice peek there, Furter boys.
Matt and Steve are like, oh shit, we gotta get back at Tommy. And Shannon, Steve's wife, basically tells Steve that, well, I'm happy you're alive, but we need to go back to America because now you've put a target on our family's back and we have to go home all over fucking football, you know? That's the fucking crazy part about this.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, Steve is okay, but he's in, you know, pretty critical condition.
One could say.
And so Pete, he's mad at Matt because he feels like that he's to blame for all of this. And now it's Pete's... it's Pete's duty to convince the rest of the group that Matt is not a spy for them. And, So anyway, he convinces them that Matt is still part of them, and Matt kind of helps them convince by agreeing to go fight a war, essentially, with the rival firm at the Millennium Dome the next day for a final brawl. Matt and Bobber show up to fight for the GSE, but Shannon turns up with her son, and Matt is like, hey, Shannon, we're fighting, instead of just, you know, not calling her attention at all, because things are getting pretty rough right now. And so Shannon, you know, pulls up to the brawl and gets out of the car, and then Tommy, because he's a fucking animal, decides to get back at Steve even more by, you know, hurting his wife and his son. And Pete, trying to save them, jumps on Tommy, starts beating him up, and she drives away, and Tommy gets the best of Pete and fucking kills him.
Pete is dead. He just died.
He gets beat the shit. He literally gets the shit beat out of him.
Yes. Like, he dies.
Well, when you die, you poop yourself.
And then everyone on all sides just kind of stand around and mourn and was like, oh, shit, we were actually hurting people real bad? Mm-hmm. Oh, no. And so, fight's over. Pete dies. And Matt goes back home to America and, you know... In a direct address says that, you know, Pete kind of taught him how to live. And so he confronts the man who pinned all the cocaine stuff on him and got kicked out of Harvard. He confronts him in the middle of a meeting and gets him to admit that it was his cocaine, puts it on a recording device, and then the guy gets all mad about it, and then Matt puts him in a fucking chokehold, and threatens to punch him. And then he's like, okay, I'll give you your old life back. And he's like, haha. And then Matt walks out of the place and he chants the whole battle cry for the GSE. The end.
Something about bubbles is what it is.
Yeah, even though, you know, SpongeBob would lead you to believe that that's not what they chant in bars, but this is about bubbles.
We're going on a baby hug, and don't think we don't know how to weed them out.
All right, boys. So, I do want to point out, though, that you said that the GSE, Green Street Elite, what does NGO mean?
Like, non-organic.
I can't remember. I thought that they were with...
Well, because they said Millwall.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's a difference there. Doesn't matter. Maybe
I've heard that Green Street Elite isn't even a real thing.
It's a non-profit organization that operates independent of any government. Typically one whose purpose is to address...
Let me finish this.
Excuse me.
NGO, non-GMO.
That's what I was thinking of. GMO.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, apparently there are two sequels to this movie. I don't know if they are directly connected.
Green Street 2, Stand Your Ground.
Yeah.
NTO.
Huh.
And Green Street 3 is Never Back Down.
Don't back down.
Hooliganism.
Is Elijah Wood in all of them?
No.
I wouldn't think so.
I don't think so.
It doesn't say what the NTO is. Millwall from NTO.
He's not on there, so I assume not. Okay. Well, interesting.
Anyway, this is an NGO. What the heck? Anyway, doesn't matter. But they do say, is it Pete? Pete says, or is it Bover?
Bova.
Says, we don't like outsiders. And then later, he goes, all coppers, all journos. So not only is he an outsider, he's also a copper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, journo.
Yeah.
Well, what later believed to be. Yeah.
Yes. what is this movie about, boys?
Okay, I'll let you go first, Kyle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Actually, Chris, I'll let you go ahead.
Yeah, okay.
I'll let you go.
Go ahead, Chris.
Kyle?
You go first.
I think it has something to do with the dangerous element of community and how that manifests itself in the masculine.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I feel like this movie is kind of similar to Fight Club in a way.
They do fight each other.
Save the ending, but of Fight Club. But I feel like this movie in a whole is about how, you know, anything, even sports, if it involves a strong following and a set of rituals, no matter what that is, it can be somewhat considered a religion in its core. And that can have both, you know, good effects and bad effects on you know, who you are as a person. But regardless, it does transform you as a person, for better or for worse.
Yeah, I I kind of a mix between the both of you. It is.
I think it's about men who are religious.
Yeah.
There is a strong level of camaraderie in this film, a very heightened sense, especially within like some of them, most of them really, well, kind of. Are at least somewhat loyal to each other based on the fact simply that they are British.
Yeah.
Or Londonese, however you say that.
Well,
and then literally the only reason why Frodo isn't accepted is because he's not from London.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that was getting kind of more so into what I was going to talk about with like the idea of tribalism.
Yeah.
And how I think that's just default for people. I mean, it makes sense, you know. It's like, this is what you know. This is what's safe to a certain extent. So anything outside that is, you know, going to be terrifying. I mean, that is the breakdown of the known and the unknown, right? The known is your city. It's walled off. And everything in there is safe. It may be a little tyrannical, sure. And it takes, you know, the divine hero to... who journeys outside of the city and can come back and transform that tyranny. But you know, that for that city, for all intents and purposes, is safe, and everything outside of that, you know, whether it be nature or other people, you know, there, everything outside those walls can kill you, and it's trying to.
It is a bit xenophobic, I think, in just that presentation.
Yeah.
But I stray away from that because eventually they do accept Frodo. And not only Frodo, but also Shannon, who was married to Steve.
Yeah.
The one who died by being brutally... Well, he didn't die.
No, he didn't die.
Being stabbed brutally in the neck, mortally in the neck with a broken bottle.
Mm-hmm.
So it is interesting that literally just his presence and willingness to become invested in the culture, like, oh, okay, cool, you're cool, what's up?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I think that like these firms, it's a lot more intimate than just like, you know, where you're from. It's not necessarily nationalism. It's not necessarily. Necessarily like a xenophobia, because I feel like that if he was, you know, with another firm, you know, or had been with another firm, it no chance of him, you know, hanging out with them at all. But like they were able to accept him in, even though he was American, because he felt right into, you know, the Green Street elite and their rituals and all that.
I think it's possible what you're saying is that like this is the only group that would accept him and that makes them different. I think that's possible. I think, however, I do think that had he been in a different group, assuming that the people were people that he could get along with, you know, like the other guy, I can't remember his name. Is it Pete? Pete.
Charlie Dunham?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hunnam.
Hunman?
Hunnam is what it says here on Rotten Tomatoes.
As the actor or the character?
The actor.
Oh, okay. Well, what? Oops.
Oh, Dunham. Yeah, you're right. Dunham, okay. That's crazy. The
character, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
So anyways, because that's
hey, remember that... at the very beginning of the episode when Kyle was like, yeah, I'm stupid?
I have not gotten a lot of sleep. But I do think if he had been in another group and they were able to get along to the extent that he was able to in this group, I think it would have gone kind of the same way. Because I think it's very clear, like, he's searching for an identity, Elijah Wood's character is at the beginning of this, and he finds that in the community, and once he's able to learn those lessons and that he does throughout the film, then he's able to go off and be his own person again. But that's because he took time to have some sort of communal purpose, and in doing so, that reinvigorated the individual spirit, I suppose.
Which is interesting, because a lot of times groupthink can get you into a lot of trouble.
Oh, and it does.
Don't cancel us.
Yeah.
Or do. We don't want you anyway. And so it is interesting to see that... ingratiation into the GSE.
Integration?
No.
Well, okay.
Ingratiation.
Okay.
It's not a real word. I didn't know what the word to use.
I think I know what you're trying to say. Yeah.
The ingratiation into that group and come out of it on the other side better and more individual than you were before you were in the group.
Yeah. Right. Well, and I think, and it's because he has a line at the very end. I don't know if this is necessarily word per word, but this is kind of what I wrote down, is that he was taught when to fight and when to stop fighting, right? And I think you could express that as he was taught why to fight.
Yeah, yeah. It's oh man, we've said this a lot, but it falls along the same lines of, at least in a conceptual level, the same idea as, and I'll explain this, from Barnyard, a strong man stands up for himself, but a stronger man stands up for others. It's that same kind of saying where it's a strong man knows how to fight, but a stronger man knows when to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got that same kind of applicable meaning in terms of its structure.
No, I agree. And that's what's kind of interesting about his character is that he is very meek at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And it's being around this ultra-masculine element of this firm. And in doing so, that awakens something that's still within him, and he's able to take that into the world and everything. And I think that's really interesting. It really is.
And he says too, and along with the masculinity, he says once he got once he got a taste for the fight, and once he realized that he wasn't made of glass, then he lived for the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems to be the entire firm's culture, just as a structure of firm, not the GSU or the NTO or NGO, but literally just what that is. Mm-hmm. It seems to be all about fighting, because it's presented like you said, they're like a gang that supports a football team,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but we hardly ever see like the sport.
Yeah.
But it's almost as if it's literally just about pride.
Yeah, well, he says at one point, Pete does, that it's about reputation. And I think it goes a little bit deeper than that. And I think that's made clear at the end of the film, at the final fight, what they're fighting for. But, you know, it almost puts on this facade of being like, yeah, you know, it's for the reputation. But I think they all know that it's deeper than that, you know.
When you're talking about that, are you talking about Joey or whatever his name was dying, and since those 10 years, or are you speaking even before then? It was deeper than that.
Because I think maybe in those past 10 years that it solely applies to that, but I think it could have been. Well, and this is the thing. Like I don't, you know, there are sociopaths out there, right?
Have you ever seen you?
Have you ever seen yourself? I know the show, but still.
Put up a mirror.
Have you ever seen you reflect? Editor, just reflect back and
reflect the viewer.
Yeah, reflect the viewer back.
The individual viewer.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll just put up a catalog of faces of all our our regular viewers.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Hayden, you're up.
Yeah got him.
Mom.
Yeah, mom.
Mommy.
Who's this? Mom.
Hello.
Hi, Mom. We were just talking about you. Anyway,
Founder.
She doesn't know what the fuck I'm talking about right now.
Nope. Founder. It's okay. Anyways.
Yes, I do agree. What?
Oh, no. I'm just thinking from her perspective. I was just like, hi, Mom.
Fuck.
It's probably that back one.
This one?
No, oh. One more. One more.
Hey, that's cute though. We'll have the pig hold the
one
mic.
More. Yeah.
Why is that not tightened?
I don't know.
The fuck is all the way loosened?
You were the last person to.
I didn't touch that one.
All right, we'll cut this all out. Chat. Oh my god!
It might have been me.
It was you.
I said it might have been. They can hear me because I'm whispering into the mic.
Yeah, there you
which
go.
Means okay. They can hear me. And I'm editing this one, so they won't know that I'm saying that it was me.
Yeah, we won't know.
They won't know.
Oh, do you like my monologue for that I edited in for the New Year's Evil?
Yeah, I did.
That was a good one.
Yeah, if you have seen that, watch it.
That was
it again.
A good bit 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's a bit?
Bacon bits.
The hell was I talking about before that?
We were talking about how there is something deeper in the fighting, in the firm.
Yeah, so, right. So I don't think, like, again, there are sociopaths out there, but I don't think you just fight just for the fun. Stop.
I agree. While they're talking, I'm going to talk about it.
Jesus
I agree.
Christ.
You guys can come in. This is part of the show. Hi, Ash. Dip your head in this. Say hi.
No, I don't want
say
to.
Say hi. Say hi, Avery. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, Mom.
Hey, I'm Avery. I produced the theme song and also the non-existent credit theme.
Revisionist history. Check
for
it out.
That one
out
episode because it was themed.
Yeah. But see, and this is where it kind of goes back, I feel like, to my original idea of the theme is camaraderie. So there may not even be an actual reason, but, like, literally because they are so close, tied through this firm, they fight for each other.
Right. Right. No, you're definitely true, or you're definitely right.
Correct.
The question is like, well, what compels people to risk violent death or major like injuries at the hands of another? You know, what compels someone to risk that? And is it really just reputation, or is it to fight for the other person? Well, and yeah. It's like, you know, maybe it's not enough to fight for the memory of what was taken, but. Mm-hmm. But maybe it's more than enough to fight for what you could lose,
yeah.
You know, because there is that aspect in there where they're like, the guy died 10 years ago.
Yeah, the kid.
And it's like he fights for this memory of something that's gone, right? But Pete is fighting for what he could lose, and he wins. You know, they get away. Like he loses. You know, he dies. But what he's fighting for. Is still there.
That legacy propels them. So whereas, were you about to say something?
I mean, I think it's because it's also just the brotherhood as well. Because the other firms pose a threat to essentially, you know, their rituals and their lifestyle. And if you take that away or you know, extinguish it, you know, what else does a man have than his family, especially the one that he has made?
Family.
Right. But it's because, you still have, despite what little you truly deserve, what you have is what you should fight for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and so this may be, so we're about to get into film theory right here, and really narrative theory. So, and this may be why... Millwall is the antagonist of the film. So typically, in a script, and this is one of those things that make a technically good script, not necessarily a good script, but in terms of technicality, it's good. It's basically there are two opposing views of life. So the protagonist usually has one that is supposedly going to persevere through the film, and the antagonist has typically the opposite or adjacent of that. And so with what you're saying, Kyle, the GSE presents the idea of fighting for what we have and what we have to gain, whereas Millwall is fighting for what has been lost.
Right.
Yeah. So they're stuck in the past. That's what makes them the antagonist, is there's two conflicting views.
Yeah.
And the director is basically saying, hey, this is what we should do. This is why we should fight.
Mm-hmm.
Not for what we've lost, but for what we have and what we can gain.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
Film theory.
I think an interesting quote to point out in this movie is that when Pete is when Pete is explaining to Matt the rivalries, when he's talking about Tommy's firm, I think that's Millwall, he essentially equates their rivalry to the Israelis and the Palestinians. Which definitely, you know, suggests that history of violence between them.
I don't remember that quote.
You don't?
Yeah, no.
You don't? Oh, okay.
There's a couple.
But it
times.
Was also hard to understand anything that they were saying.
It was. Couldn't they talk like they all like?
And it was just a lot of like multiple men yelling incoherently.
Said, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, the YouTube captions for this movie was fucking hilarious. Because it didn't know what it was saying.
Yeah, I didn't have the captions on.
Which video?
At one point when Pete was screaming, it put in hot dogs. It was fucking hilarious.
Were yours auto-generated?
Yeah.
Okay, one I found, it did have them embedded in.
Oh,
damn, maybe I'll have to rewatch what the
auto-generated
captions
on.
It
was pretty fucking funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there were a couple political statements that I thought were very interesting to be kind of intertwined with this film, and I was wondering if they would mean anything, and I'm sure they do, but they're subtle enough to where if you blink, you miss them, and I blinked.
The Palestinian thing was the only one that I remember.
Yeah. There was another one that was...
talking about war or something.
Yeah, well, he references the British being shot by the U.S. in a war that the U.S. started.
Yeah.
And I looked it up, because... My knowledge of history essentially ends with the 80s, which is where all my textbooks ended. So and then it picks right back up at like 2012. Because that's when I started paying attention to current
events.
Yeah,
go ahead and tell me there's not a conspiracy.
So yeah, I have like a 20-year gap or 20 or 30-year gap of history.
Kyle literally knows nothing that happened between 1980.
Yeah.
Or well, you know what? I'll give you 1920. I mean.
Yeah, you know what? I'll give you an extra 60 years. You don't know.
I'll give you 1990 to 2012. Those years, Kyle doesn't know anything about history.
Those 22 years are just didn't happen.
I know the iPod came out. He has no idea what 9/11 is.
Jesus Christ. But anyways,
does remember Spider-Man, which came out the same year as 9/11. But that's not history.
No, it came out 2002. Idiot. It was, however, the first promo for it did feature the World Trade Centers.
It did.
And they took it out of the movie, scene.
You don't know about 9/11.
There's this
weird thing in the trailer where there's these buildings, and then the next one, they're not there.
Why the fuck are we making this a bit?
I don't know what a bit is.
But anyways, I believe, because this movie came out in 2005... And I just looked up British officers shot, or I looked up British troops killed by the U.S.
That's how they talk.
And the one that would make most sense from like a screenwriting perspective was what happened in 2003, and all it is just that like one or two, like I think it was like three or four people in total were shot in March and April during the Iraq War in 2003.
I mean, that is...
And so I think that as far as a timeline for making the movie, that makes the most sense.
Yeah, four people. That's more than COVID. I put room around that to cut it out.
Yep.
I thought it was pretty good, though, huh? Anyway, so yeah, the Iraqi war and killing the British.
Yeah. That was the only other thing that I kind of really caught.
Can we talk about Bova for a second?
Mm-hmm. Bova.
So number one, what a weird name.
Well, they're
also
British.
Also, before I do that, firm. You know how like the Brits, is.
Mm-hmm.
Say like chips instead of like fries or whatever, and the lifts instead of the elevator, and loo instead of bathroom.
Let's say crisps instead of chips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though a chip is a fry, but a fry is a crisp is a
cookie.
God
damn, you guys are fucking stupid. I mean, I know you guys came up with the shit originally.
We improved it, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Anyway, firm sounds like a British term.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, instead of calling it a gang, they call it a firm. For whatever reason.
It's a lot more formal. Because
it's a lot more firmal.
Firmal.
Which is weird, because I feel like the firm itself is... a lot less, like, cohesive than a gang or a mob.
Yeah.
Or mafia. Like, they go to a bar, they yell, and then they go to places to fight people.
They're just hooligans. That's all they are. They're not gangsters.
Yeah, they're just hooligans.
They just, you know, cause a ruckus, and whenever, like, someone actually does die, they piss their pants and cry for a little bit.
What happened? You killed that?
So they're not actually a gang, they're just, you know,
a bunch of guys.
Bunch of guys.
Just a bunch of men.
Men. But,
Bover, he's the one who was like, we don't accept outsiders. And also not coppers and journos. So... he never liked Frodo to begin with. You could basically call him
Saruman.
Yeah, Sauron or Saruman. Definitely not Gandalf. But yeah, and so when he finds out he's a fucking journo, he basically goes to Tommy and is like,
"Which was
hey,
a very bitch move."
Now that you say that, throw it up. I wrote in my notes, Millwall attacked GSE. Tommy attacked Terry, or not Terry, Steve. I put Terry in that. I don't know why. Steve. And then all because Bover's a bitch.
He is. He really is.
And he is. Because, but it's interesting. Because it seems like he felt betrayed by his own brothers.
And then he literally betrayed his own brothers. Yeah.
Which got Pete killed. And then Bava was like,
And it's crazy and because...
When Terry got stabbed and they carried him out, Bava was like freaking out.
Yeah, yeah. When if you've seen, he caused all of it.
If you've seen Arcane, remember before...
So Bava should have died.
Really? Yeah. When... not Powder, the pink-haired one, goes to save Marcus, whatever his name is, and then they leave and there's the scene that Powder's freaking out. Yeah, that's what Bava did. Yeah. They don't know what I'm talking about. But no. You do.
Well, I think also there's an interesting element of the difference between those two gangs is that Bava has this dynamic of power as the head, whereas Pete has more of a dynamic of, I guess, cooperation is a better... well, it's not the best term, but I can't think of the word. But I think it's, you know, that it's certainly true. It's like, you know, hierarchies, which they exist in, you know, all of humankind. They exist in the animal kingdom too. But hierarchies have a top, and the person at top does have power. But it's an appeal whether it... Okay, here's the question. Is it an appeal to authority or an appeal to power? Because there is overlap on them, but they're not the same thing.
So, to put things in a bit more layman's terms, imagine, so we take Book of Boba Fett, right? So, the Milway and Tommy is Jabba, and Pete or Steve, because they're both kind of in charge.
Yeah.
Pete is technically in this film, is Boba. So, Boba says, Jabba, he ruled with fear. I will rule with respect. I thought that was pretty good. Mm. So that.
Yeah.
And I do agree that, like, the overlap between fear and authority, how it's kind of...
Power and authority.
Well, right, but...
Yeah.
Power, that kind of power often breeds fear.
Yeah.
Just in followers. So the difference between power and authority...
Yeah.
Really is, you respect one, and then you are scared if you don't follow the other that he's going to beat your ass. Which he... Tommy proves... When they're in the diner, I think it's the first time we see him, right? Is in the diner? When he goes and he's like, everybody shut up, I'm having a conversation.
I think so. I we may have seen him in the opening.
Okay.
But yes.
Okay. Well, the diner scene. And basically he tells everybody to shut up. And then there's this one like couple who is talking quietly. And he gets up and is like, tell your little woman to shut up, I'm having a conversation. And she doesn't. And so then Tommy basically bashes this guy's head against the... Doesn't kill him, doesn't even bleed, I don't think.
Mm.
But it is this display of insane power. And not even... it's not even really power, it's basically just everybody's afraid to do anything. So he gets his way.
Right, which I guess is power.
Yeah. And then Pete and Steve, and this is the same thing in Book of Boba Fett too, is instead of casting away these people, they treat them with kindness and give them respect to begin with, which in turn breeds respect for the leaders.
Right. Well, and it's because these hierarchies that are built on power, they're unsustainable. And we actually see this in chimp societies too, is that, you know, there's the dominant male chimp, and the one that, you know, holds total, like, control over the other chimps there, like, they rise up against him and you know, they kill him.
One could say Rise of the Apes.
Yeah, Rise of the Jungle of the Apes. But what... And it's interesting because it's like, yeah, that we see that happening in you know, human history, you know? When somebody at the top becomes far too powerful without, you know... What any consideration about the people under them, then the people under them, you know, they rise up and then they take over and then it's a new regime, essentially.
Yeah, right? we see this in, I don't know if it's Rise or Fall, I don't know which one it is, Planet of the Apes, the new ones, where basically, Black Panther 2, and we see basically the leader who is respected is killed and then they're dead. And so the ruler who leads with power and fear takes over, and everybody's miserable.
Yeah, that was Dawn. That was the sequel. Yeah.
Okay, okay. And basically, what ends up happening is that the leader comes back, and everybody, seeing that the leader they respect is still alive, turn their backs on the current leader, the one that leads with power, and the one that leads with power, the one that leads with power is completely overthrown, relatively easily. Now, I'm sure there's casualties and whatnot, but
right,
you know, even in Black Panther specifically, Okoye, after T'Challa is supposedly killed, I forget what his little girlie's name is, but she's like, aren't you going to leave? And Okoye says, my allegiance is not to the king, but to Wakanda. Which she's saying that even though there's a bad man in power, my allegiance is to the country, and I will protect the country regardless who's at rule.
Yeah.
And so when T'Challa shows back up, her ethics on that are almost compromised. Now, the challenge isn't over, so technically T'Challa is still king, so there's a little bit of gray area. But theoretically, she compromises her ethics and is like, you know what? That guy's got my respect, so I'm going to fight for him, even if I am compromised.
Right. Yeah, well, yeah, and I think that's a kind of an interesting parallel. I also think it's, you know, I touched on this earlier that, you know, there's this, like, dangerous element that's attractive to Elijah Wood's character. And I think that could be because he has, like, a really bad relationship with his father.
Yeah.
And worse than his sister, actually. She even says it, that, you know, he held on to that, you know, the bad feelings from that longer than she did. And and you know, he's trying to go into the same profession that his dad was in, and then he got kicked out, you know, because he was
not even of his own accord,
right? No, because he was too meek and he didn't, you know, want to fight for himself. And I think maybe, you know, his dad wasn't around a lot, and I think maybe he was lacking that masculine element. And he went from one extreme to the other, certainly, but
yeah.
In the end, it seems that he's found some sort of balance after seeing the dangers of both sides.
Yeah, and that, you know, like you just said it perfectly, and that ties back into exactly what we said at the top of the episode of what this film is about, too, mm-hmm. You know, learning how to fight and then knowing when to fight.
Right. Which is crucial. Because there certainly are things worth fighting for, and it is not necessarily a physical fight. Although, if you believe it strong enough, then yes, you know, that's right. Your last resort. But there are things in life worth fighting for, and if you don't believe that, then you know,
what are you?
Well, it's more so than, you know, why do anything?
Yeah.
You know, if what you care about and what you have dreams for or whatever your goals are, if you're not willing to fight to bring those into reality, then maybe you don't have those dreams, or maybe you don't have those goals, maybe you don't care about that, you know?
Yeah, you know, and it's, I think, I'm trying to think, I don't think there was a major reason why GSE fought Milway all those 10 years ago when Joey, whatever his name is, was killed. I think literally Pete is like, yeah, we just wanted to fight him, and so we did. And there may have been some more tension than there was before, but there really isn't. There isn't a reason the 10 years ago that there was a reason in the last fight or even the one before that. It's revenge for Joey, for Milway. But 10 years ago, it was just like, oh, we gotta fight them. And so I think even the firm as a whole progressed to that point where I was like, when to fight and not just fighting for the sake of fighting.
Right, right. Which is important, because if you fight for everything, then everything
is nothing.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything.
Who is it? It's if everybody's super, then nobody's super.
That's Syndrome. From The Incredibles, yeah.
Alright. Throw him up.
I'll give them heroics. I'll give them the most spectacular heroics anyone's ever seen! And when I'm old and I've had my fun, I'll sell my invention so that everyone can be superheroes. Everyone can be super! And when everyone's super, no one will be.
Throw that clip up.
I was just quickly reading into some of the real firms. Apparently, they are referred to as it's referred to as football hooliganism. I don't think that Green Street is real. I'm not sure. Jared, who's a big soccer guy, he told me it wasn't real, but Millwall is, and they're one of the most notorious ones in real life. But yeah, I was just kind of reading into like how bad some of the stuff got, and they've been around since like the 60s, but they kind of died out a little bit around the late 80s. But in 1985, a 14-year-old boy died in a stadium when the stadium wall collapsed, tumbling as a result of Leeds fans being pushed up against the wall by police. And a lot of these, like, firms, it's resulted in a lot of police injury. Like, that one alone, it had, like, over 100 people injured. And Millwall, in, like, one night alone, I think, injured around, like, 500. Which is fucking crazy.
Wow. Yeah, it is. All over football.
Yeah.
Football. Yeah,
they're gonna get me now.
What is football to them?
No, well, I'm making fun of them for their culture.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, It does seem crazy, but in that sense, so does any religion. Because at that point, to them, that is essentially a religion.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. Yeah,
I think it's almost more cult following.
Yes.
Which turned into religion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
There mm-hmm. you go.
Because again, you got your following, you got your rituals, you got the fellowship, and then you got the rivals. Mm-hmm. You know. But
there was a little bit of police involvement in this film. Not a whole lot enough, I don't even think, to merit real discussion.
Yeah, they were never around when someone fucking died.
Yeah,
so
that's true. They were around when Bava was sleeping, though, on the bench.
Yeah.
But I was looking at what you had up here, Chris. So there is one called Chelsea something. They're in Chelsea. There was I saw it.
Yeah, I saw it too.
There you okay, go. Chelsea Headhunters. When he is getting mugged by the Birmingham fellows, they give him what they call a Chelsea grin, and they take out a credit card and they shove it in his mouth and like cut the sides of his lips.
Yep.
So that's pretty rough.
Yeah, that's actually how the Joker got his scars.
Yeah, he got a Chelsea grin. Yeah.
You want to know how I got these scars?
In Birmingham, Alabama.
It was the
though.
Chelsea grin of Birmingham, Alabama. Mary, do you want to know how I got these scars?
My father liked football.
My father liked football, Mary.
He was a part of the Chelsea Headhunters.
Yeah, and the Chelsea Headhunters.
Headhunters.
Chelsea Headhunters.
Yeah, brother.
Yeah, they were one of the most feared in the 80s, and throughout history, they have had strong links to white supremacist organizations.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know the connection between this, but the Birmingham fellows that give Frodo the Chelsea grin were indeed black. I don't know what that means.
I don't know enough about like English like culture in the modern
times. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me either.
Yeah. Also, they do real like the Chelsea Headhunters have done real terrorist shit. It says in 2014 the Headhunters were in what
over football?
Yes. Yes. In 2014, the Headhunters were involved in pre-planned violence in France before a Champions League. With around 300 hooligans entering France through Belgium to avoid detection.
That's like some war shit.
I know! Oh my God. Jesus. I mean, if you're going to, like, you know, kill and terrorize over shit, make it something a little less lame than football. I mean, we kill over drugs.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, guy's like, yo, give me some weed. And he's like, no, bro. Kablooey.
Yeah.
Kablam.
Skibbity bop. We got the Bloods and the Crips. Anyway.
And they kill over
Bloods in the Crips with the silver spoon.
MS-13 and the man in the moon.
All right.
You know, if you don't step up, you're gonna be dead. I'm gonna put credit card in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we're gonna I'll
hit you if you don't like red.
Yeah. All right, boys. Do you have anything else for this film?
We should probably cut out those last few seconds.
So. Nah, it's fine.
We have guns.
The guy.
There were no guns on set.
I will say this film made me proud to be an American because I'm more proud of my country's gangs.
Oh, you're attacking a people football now.
England's gangs.
The guy who plays Pete's brother was in Doctor Who on the episode where his girlfriend turned into a cement head and she could only give him
head.
That's
where he's from.
Yeah, I realized like halfway through I was like, oh. That's the guy with the cement head
Elton.
Girlfriend. Yeah, Elton. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Charlie Dunham is King Arthur in Arthur Legend of the Sword.
Oh, yeah?
I think this may have been his debut.
Huh.
Maybe wrong.
Wait, is that the one that was directed by the guy who did Kingsman?
I don't know. It's the one that's King Arthur Legend of the Sword, and it's like...
It's got the sword.
Cool CGI stuff. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That is.
I enjoy that movie. It does not have good critic reviews. I enjoyed it. CGI was cool.
Yeah, it was a fun
action
movie.
Scenes were cool. Arthur, cool twist on it. Music is awesome, I think.
Was it better than The Green Knight?
That's a different type of movie.
That's not a movie I watched to enjoy.
Right.
And now I did enjoy it.
I did enjoy the part where he came in his hand. That was really cool.
Yeah. I like...
And what editor? The best part was seeing that on like a 60-foot screen too.
Next to your best buds.
Yeah. I think that was when like a girl walked out of the theater.
Yeah.
Yeah. When
so
happened.
Many people walked out of that theater.
Yeah.
During the movie, that was the first time I ever saw that.
When that happened, I said, "Guys, I have to go to the bathroom."
Other guys come, turns you on. Disgusting!
Disgusting!
In a very straight way. not that well.
Right.
That reminds me of my cum. I'd like to see it again.
Jesus Christ. Oh, no. What have we become?
What are we rating this movie? Cum. What are we rating this movie?
Did y'all have anything else?
To
put it aptly and just a quick little phrase that you can carry in your back pocket and whip it out whenever you want to. A strong man knows how to fight, but a stronger man knows when to fight.
Yeah. You happy that you finally got one?
Yeah.
You finally got a nice little phrase.
Yeah. Here you go. This is what it's going to be. Oh, this is what we're going to symbolize it as. Okay. Put that in your back pocket. And now you do that.
All right. Rate this movie, Jake. Scale 1 to 10.
I'd give it a 7.
7?
I'd give it a 6.
I'll meet you guys halfway, 6.5.
Okay, fair enough.
And
it would be higher. Honestly, it would be higher if I could understand what they were saying.
Yeah.
Well, you're just not British.
That's not my fault.
Anyway.
We have to do this rap Britishly.
Okay.
British. So Britishly.
How do we do? What's a British like beat? How do you do that?
Skip it up, get it up, pop, 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 pop. And a ting ting boom, pop. And a skrrr.
2 + 2 = 4 - 1. That's 3 quick maths.
Pop, 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 boom, pop. Skip up. Okay. Said, I'll get you a British beat.
Wait. This thing goes skrrr. Skip up, pop, pop, pop. Because
yes. Go and put that up.
Pop, pop,
put that up.
Pop, pop, pop. Skip it up.
Hold up.
Pop, pop, pop.
Said my name. Pop is Mackie McBop.
Pop, skilly pop, 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 p
And call me Big Mike, and I'm British. Yeah. You what, mate? I'm going to find my prostate because I am a man.
Alright, wait. I can't rap British.
I'm British, yeah.
I just heard something about prostate.
You what, mate? I got to find my prostate because I am a man and I really like that football. I call it football, and I don't call it soccer. You try to find my wife, and I suck her in the face because I'm a man. Do you understand that I like to drink beer, and I like to hunt deer, and I like to kick a ball, and I like the fall, but I don't like the autumn. I don't like the winter because the cold cuts me like a splinter. I got the wood for the ball game. I killed a man. I got no shame. I got a bottle. I'm going to stab it in your throat. Hey, stab it in your throat. Stab it in your throat. Stab the motherfucking bottle in your throat. Kick it like a rope. Kick it like a rope. Kick it like you are tied up and there's a rope between your ankles. It's kind of dangling because I got a big dick kind of dangling. That Green Street hooligans. I don't want to see this movie again.
Take a shit.
Prostate, yeah? A brish.
I shit on my prostate.
A brish, bite.
I shit on my prostate.
I shit on my prostate.
I've got prostate cancer, mate.
I shit out of my dick tube, son.
Welcome to the
welcome to England.
We're fucking England. Fuck Millway, yo.
Yeah,
yeah,
what are you doing in there?
Fuck your pepper spray, mate.
Yo, get out of here, Millway.
Get out of here, Millway.
Yeah, fucking Millway.
Fucking we don't like fucking here. We don't like outsiders. You're outside because you're outsider.
Fucking stout sauerkraut, mate.
Fucking taking a piss, huh?
Stout sauerkraut.
Fucking taking a piss.
Stout and sauerkraut.
Stout and sauerkraut.
Yay. Oh.
Oh.